Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right. I'm looking forward to sharing this episode with you. It was an interview with Brian Winters, who's been a longer-term provider attorney with us out of New Jersey. In fact, he's been working with us for about 18 months now. And what's interesting about Brian is he came from, I wouldn't say a big, you know, maybe a bigger firm mentality. He was used to charging, you know, traditional retainers, and you know, even shares on this episode how he used to look at the size of the retainer as the most important aspect of trying to make money. Is could he, if it was a 5,000 retainer, could he get it to be 7,500? If it was 7,500, could it be 10,000? And he had a real shift, you know, as a result of our conversations and started working these leads and realizing that, you know, three clients of $3,000 is, you know, the same as $9,000 retainers. And, you know, a lot of clients, he's going to be able to have an opportunity to work with a lot more clients by offering options that are in these, you know, lower price points and offering flat rates and unbundled services and payment plans and so forth. So it's been a real shift for him. And he shares that in this episode, you know, how he was able to make that transition mentally and then start implementing it into his process. Yeah, he also shares, you know, what the types of flat rate options that he offers and the process he's developed for fielding the leads, the amount of time he takes on each call, some of the challenges he had when he tried to delegate the fielding of the leads and how that affected his conversion rate. And so he really has been sticking to calling those leads. We also talk about an expansion he's been working on to handling some other regions, balancing out travel time, how to source office space so that he can broaden his footprint and serve more clients. So it's a really interesting episode, lots to take away from here. So let's get right into it. This interview with Brian Winters, one of our provider attorneys out of Bradley Beach, New Jersey. All right, Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, glad we're getting a chance to connect here. It's been a fun ride so far. Hearing that the results have been pretty good since we first started, and it's been gradually ramping up. And I know you've been working on experimenting with expanding into some other areas. So I appreciate you taking a little bit of time today to jump on and share how that journey has been for you.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So maybe just a good place to start. Just give a little background on how you got your start in the practice of law, the region that you're serving in New Jersey, and the areas of law or focus area of your practice.
Well, I'm from New Jersey. I grew up around here on the Jersey Shore, and I went to college in Boston. I went to Tufts University, and then I went to law school in North Carolina. I went to Duke University, and then through a number of twists of fate, I ended up back where I started, which is on the Jersey Shore. I remember when I was in law school, and everyone wanted to work for one of these white shoe Wall Street firms, including myself. I remember saying to myself, well, the one thing I'm not going to do is family law. And of course, as life would have it, that's now the only thing that I do. But I like it. I've been practicing for about 25 years now, and I'm a certified matrimonial law attorney.
Okay. And what made you, did you start working some other areas of law and then transition to family law? How did you end up focusing your practice on family law?
I worked for a big firm in Newark, and I was in their litigation department and did a number of different things. But that firm's bread and butter was matrimonial. And just through experience, I learned that I hated everything else, the corporate law or the civil litigation. And the matrimonial stuff was something that I enjoyed and I was good at. It's something that it's common sense. It's everyday experiences. And I find that it's gratifying because you can really apply common sense solutions to vexatious problems.
Right. And I was just taking a look here. And it looks like we've got about almost a year and a half under our belt of working together. And so maybe you can just speak to a little bit about how that the last year and a half has been for you, as far as, you know, I know we've been ramping up gradually and exploring different regions, especially recently, but, how things have been going since we got started working almost 18 months ago?
Well, it's funny, Dave. I what I usually tell people who I contact leads is the truth, which is that this unbundled service was not something that I invented. I had to be talked into it. But since I've been talked into it, now I'm perhaps its biggest proponent. I've been very successful, just in terms of my practice and, of course, in terms of making money. You say we've been ramping up, which is true, but I'll tell you, right off that very first week, I think I had 3 clients, and the next week, I think I had 4 clients, and as luck would have it, one of the clients that I had in those first 2 weeks has been my most lucrative case. I was telling you before we spoke that I probably billed and earned and was paid, you know, somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000 on that case. It's still not over.
Yeah, and can you brought something up there that I think is I'd like to shine a light on, is that you initially it was not something you were doing, but you had to be kind of talked into it, and now it's something that, you're offering. Do you remember what that initial resistance is that you had to offering these options, and what it was that you came to experience in, or why that shifted for you once you started offering these options in your practice? Because I think that might be relevant for other attorneys that, you know, are looking in at this and saying, you know, well, I've only ever done the $5,000 traditional retainer. You know, what is this whole unbundled thing? What are the economics of it? You know, wouldn't you make very much money if you're working with low income people? So what were the resistant points for you? And
I think quite frankly that it was a change in mindset. And initially, I mean, to be blunt, I think it was snobbery. I mean, I was always like some of my colleagues, I was always looking for the biggest retainer, whether if it was $5,000, it should be $75,000. If it was $7,500, well then, it should be a $10,000 retainer. It was always the size of the retainer that mattered to me. And I guess I just didn't realize that I can have, you know, $3,000 cases are the same as one $9,000 case. In retrospect, it seems silly to say it out loud. But again, it was this sort of change of mindset that that I can do just as well, if not better, charging a reasonable rate, getting a result, and moving on.
Right. And I'd like to really dive into that, you know, as far as how that has played itself out in practice, you know, when you're not working with clients that are, you know, dropping these, you know, high amounts of retainers, and you're working with, you know, smaller amounts and just working with a lot more people, and then also being a little bit more creative with the options that you're offering. So can you talk about how you had to shift the way in which you were working with your clients and what the types of options you started to offer once you started to embrace that option?
Well, when I initially speak with a new lead, I offer them the unbundled service, and I explain to them that I can be retained to do isolated tasks. I can write a letter, or I can do the papers and not go to court, or I can go to court and not do the papers. And I can, you know, offer, you know, isolated services, and that helps people from a budgetary perspective. But I have to tell you that I don't have a lot of experience in doing that, because my experience has been that most people say, can you just do everything for me? So I have to tell you that I would say easily 90 to 95% of the clients, the cases, end up being full representation cases.
Are there times when it starts out where you're just doing one task for them and maybe you're kind of meeting them with where they're at, helping them with one aspect, and then they transition once they realize that it might be a little more complicated?
That transition happens very, very quickly.
In the initial conversation, on the phone, or when you meet with them in the office, or once you've done some work?
How does that evolve? Mostly when it's I meet with them in the office, because I tell people, and it's true, that, you know, I say that you can pay this amount of money for this isolated task, or this amount of money for this isolated task, or I can do full representation. And then when they say back to me, well, I would of course prefer full representation, but we have to start with the initial premise, which is that I don't have, you know, $10,000 to spend. And so I say to them, okay, I understand that. So let's now think of a way that I can give you full representation for, you know, for an amount or according to a payment regimen that we that you could afford. It has to be a two-way street. If it's agreeable to me, that's fine. If it is agreeable to you, that's fine. And I like to work with as many flat fee arrangements as I can. I find that once people know what they're looking at, even if it's more than they wanted to spend initially, if they had said, oh, I want to spend, you know, $1,200 and I say it's going to be $3,000. If I say, okay, well, let's do the $1,200 now and we'll spread out the rest over the next 4 months or something along those lines, they understand and they appreciate it.
Okay. And can you shine a bit of...
Also, I think that it's not, you know, I was initially worried that people would consider it to be a sort of bait and switch type of thing. But I think that, especially people who have spoken to other lawyers and they say, oh, I know it's not cheap. I always tell people that the idea of this is that it's lower cost. I don't say, but I'm careful to say it's not low cost. It's not free and it's not inexpensive. It's expensive. All law is expensive. It's just lower as compared to what you may experience outside of this model.
Right. And lower also in the sense that you end up doing, well, maybe can you talk about that as far as, you know, you've used to offer these big retainers. Would you end up doing more work, less work on these cases, or is it about the same, or do you kind of break it one piece at a time? And so, and that's the thing is, like, a lot of people assume unbundled means it has to be, you get some kind of cheap lawyer, they're doing it at a discount. And, you know, maybe, you know, we have attorneys that, you know, have a lower overhead, so they don't have to charge such a premium hourly rate. So that's probably true. But, you know, usually what it means, it's a little bit less time, or it's billing one section at a time rather than requiring the entire amount up front. So can you talk about how that difference has been for your firm?
You know, my firm has been in business for a very long time, and if I may be immodest, I do excellent work and we do excellent work. And it's, to be blunt, it's inconceivable to me to do, you know, half a job or do something other than 100%. So I'm never going to do a poor job. And I just tell the clients that point blank. I find if you're honest with people, you know, they tend to believe you. Now, we were saying that a lot of the people who end up retaining me pursuant to, you know, find me on Unbundled are not necessarily divorce cases, but more so cases where they actually have isolated issues to begin with. It's just custody or it's just child support. In New Jersey, we have, you know, what's called an FD docket. FD means, you know, the parties were never married, but they have children together. FM is the divorce. They're married and they need to get divorced, and it's a, you know, a full blown thing that could take months and months or even years and years. FD cases, by their very nature, are isolated. Usually, you file papers, you go to court one day. Sometimes there's mediation. Sometimes it gets resolved just by way of negotiation in the hallways. But it's very rare that you have to come back day after day after day. So the nature of the work is amenable to having just an isolated task. So I don't have to spend all that much time working up the case, especially since, thanks to Unbundled to a large extent, I have a lot of volume. And my staff is now becoming trained to, okay, here's a custody case, these are the forms. And we take down some basic information and, you know, what's the term? I guess populate the form. And then I typically go through and edit it and make it good. But as I said, the types of things that I'm being retained to do lend themselves to just having it be sort of almost rote. And
they're,
you get into the rhythm.
Yeah.
Streamline. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's what we've heard a lot as well, you know, especially when you have a higher volume of leads and you're doing a lot of the similar cases, is that you can start to develop, you know, systems and procedures for each different thing. And do you guys ever use any form of document automation software, or or is it primarily your paralegals are doing a lot of the preparation, then you're overseeing it?
Yeah, my paralegals do it, and then I oversee it.
And so you find that by doing the same...
I know, I was just going to say that, yes, although cases tend to be similar, of course every case is different and has its own, you know, nuances, and we talk about it. Don't forget that my paralegals have been practicing law. My primary paralegal has been with the firm longer than I have. She's been doing this about 30 years.
Wow.
So she's very good, and she speaks with, she's very good about making contact with the clients and fielding phone calls and understanding what's going on and taking it very seriously.
Right. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that, given that you're servicing a higher volume of clients and also receiving a higher volume of leads, given the coverage area you're handling. Can you talk about do you make all the lead calls yourself, or if not, do you have a staff member do that? We can dive into that a bit.
So I'm glad you asked me that. I anticipated that you would, and I have an answer for it, which is that I try to call everybody myself. If I don't call them myself, and if I have my staff call them, whether it's my one of my paralegals or someone else in the office, they never retain me.
Why do you think
that
is?
There's a reason for that. I think it's because people pick up on the fact that it's not important enough for you that you have to have, you know, your secretary call and make an appointment. Then they're much more impressed when I speak with them myself. Also, I spend 20 minutes sometimes with people on the phone. And I also have the ability to be more flexible. If I have someone who's 45 minutes away, my secretary is not going to tell them, oh, well, you know, Mr. Winters can meet you, closer to you, or, in any way be as accommodating as I can be on the phone. Sometimes I say to the person, oh, I'm going to be in court anyway that day. Why don't I meet you in the cafeteria? Something like that. I can assess each situation and be more flexible in what I say to the potential lead.
Right. And I think...
I don't know, Dave. I mean, maybe you could tell me. But I'm telling you that it just turns out to be that as day follows night, that if it's my staff member who's calling, invariably it's a very poor rate of return. Whereas if I call, it's much more likely than the person will retain me.
Yeah, and I would agree with that 100%, especially with what attorneys have shared with us. You know, a lot of times there's this transition point where, you know, when maybe they start off as a solo, they're fielding all the leads themselves, and then they start to get busy. They got all these cases, and so they go, okay, staff member, you start making these calls and just book them in with me, and then I'll talk, you know, and we'll retain it from there. And then, you know, almost invariably, the moment they do that, all of a sudden their conversion rate just plummets completely.
I've had the same experience. I'll tell you something also, which is good, which is that when the lead comes in, I try to call them as quickly as I can. Now, I can't always call them right away because sometimes the lead comes in at 2 a.m. But if someone calls me and I get back to them right away, usually it's almost instantaneous. I've had so many cases where people say, what do you mean? I just hit send.
Right.
You know, they're shocked.
Yeah. They hit the send button and then their phone is ringing. They're like, how is that even possible?
How is that even possible? Right.
Yeah. Well, and that, you know, that's the real time lead delivery, but, you know, and I think that's a really, really important point. You know, in sales, you know, they talk a lot about exceeding expectations. And also, you know, when someone gets a call that quickly, they're like, wow, I mean, that's so quick. You're already ahead of the game from a credibility and a customer service standpoint. And then second of all, most people's typical experience of a law firm is that, oh, they're going to, you know, talk to the secretary, and then they're going to have to pay $300 to $500 to meet with Richard Shannon, who's been practicing for over 50 years and was just on our previous episode. He says, you know, he describes this as like, then you get to speak with the hoo-bah lawyer, you know, that's like so busy that like doesn't have time. Whereas when they get that phone call from an attorney straight away like that, I mean, it's just a completely different experience. It really, I think, gives people, helps them feel a lot more comfortable and just confident that you're the type of attorney for them.
You want to know something funny? When I told you I used to work for a big law firm when I first started out, and they had a different philosophy, which was they would have the client come in at 2:30, and the client would come in at 2:30, and it'd be 2:30, it'd be 2:45, it'd be 3:30, and I'd say to the partner, the person's waiting in the lobby, don't we have to get out there? And he'd say, no, make them wait. It makes you seem more important. I always thought that was kind of, I disagreed with that approach. And when I came to work with my family's firm, that's the one thing that I refuse to do is make people wait. I mean, as best I can, I try not to.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, I can't imagine you could ever perceive that. I mean, maybe if it's, some Wall Street thing and you're trying to, I can't even imagine a scenario in which that would be appreciated by the other party. Because the thing is, what a lot of salespeople sometimes forget, especially with internet leads, is they're trying to go from contact to sale. They're trying to figure out how can I sell this person on my service? How can I enroll them? But really, it's contact, relationship, sale. And that's the big difference between a referral, client from a friend or a family member, and an internet lead is the referral already has that relationship established through that other person. And so now they already trust you because you help them. Whereas with internet lead, they haven't ever met you before. And so there isn't a relationship. There is not yet trust. And so that's partly why it's so key that you're making those calls yourself, and that why there's such a big difference there is without that trust and relationship established straight away, there really isn't anything to keep that person really, attracted to want to work with you specifically. And so that's in everything that we've seen as far as the strategies and the options, we've talked about unbundled options where you're offering, a lower cost starting point. It gives people an opportunity to start working with you so that they can get more comfortable and get a feel for who you are and meet you and all that kind of thing. So, that these are all things that lend itself well to building that relationship, building that trust. And those are the fundamentals, or at least the consistent things that we see that lead to really good results, especially when feeling leads specifically. So I'm glad you've embraced
that's true.
That.
I didn't realize that it's been a year and a half, but if you say so, it's gone so fast. But I have already repeat customers. I've resolved their matters months and months ago, and they say, oh, something has arisen again, and they immediately call me back.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and then you also get the referrals and so forth, which happens quite often as well for many of our attorneys. So maybe we can talk a little bit more about the phone consultation versus the in-office consultation, because your phone consultation, 20 minutes, we've got a lot of different strategies for doing that initial call. Some people just really touch base and want to get them straight in the office. Others take 20, 30 minutes to really build that relationship, understand what's really going on, and then qualify them and decide if they're really someone that you're going to take the next step with them and so forth. So can you talk about what your phone consultation usually looks like? What's your primary goal on that call? And what's the extent that you'll have, you'll discuss, the different options and finances on that call versus having them come in the office first, next?
I usually call right away as soon as I can. And I just like to ask some questions initially and let the person talk and tell me what's going on. From what they say, usually I can tell whether someone is just looking for free advice, or whether it's nothing I can help them with. And in those cases, I keep the conversations relatively short. But if it's a case where I think that someone is serious about moving forward, or if it's something that I think I can be helpful with, I spend more time. People they're not lawyers, so they don't know what's important and what's not. They just want to tell you the whole story. So usually what I say to people is, look, I have time. I'm interested. We can talk for as long as you want. But let me ask you some fairly direct questions so I can frame the discussion. And that helps sort of, direct people away from starting, 6 years ago, just getting sort of down to brass tacks. And sometimes it does take 20 minutes to go through the whole story. Sometimes when you ask them pointed questions, it takes more like 10 minutes or less, because when you frame it in, you know, certain direct questions, they sort of internalize the fact that that certain things are important, and that the whole sordid story is perhaps less important, or less important for purposes of that initial conversation.
Right. And so you have to kind of balance them, you know, letting them share their story and give, you know, some, you know, get out what it is they want to get out about the challenge that they're having, and at the same time keep things focused in a direction that's going to be productive and useful.
Right. And then I tell people at some point, I say, okay, well, look, you found me on, you know, this unbundled thing, and let me tell you what it's all about. And
we should buy the domain name thatunbundledthing.com. Because it's, yeah, that's what is common. It was that unbundled thing, I think, there where they, you know, do, yeah, so anyway.
Well, I don't mean to diminish it. I'm just saying that.
Well, it's just, you know, people don't recognize they're not going to remember the domain name. So you can just say unbundled and they'll go, okay, yeah, that unbundled legal help thing. Yeah.
You know, unbundled, I'm sure, does excellent work with, you know, search engine optimization or whatever it is, just judging from the pure volume of the calls, because I've had my website, I've dealt with people to, you know, market it and spend money and all that stuff. And it works to a much lesser degree than has your service.
Hmm. Okay. Sorry, I interrupted you. So you're saying, you know, once they kind of wound down with the story.
Then I say, okay, well, I introduce unbundled, and I tell them what it's all about. And as I said, I'm very honest about the fact that it's not free and it's not cheap. It's less expensive than perhaps it could be. It's lower cost than perhaps it could be. But nothing in life is free. And people, I think, appreciate that. And I tell people that I try to work within their budget. And people, I think, are honest with me also. They say, well, I spoke to a lawyer and he says, or she says it's going to be $5,000. $5,000. With the three people, they said $5,000. And then sometimes they say, look, if it was three, I'd understand. $3,000 I can do. And, you know, I say, okay. You know, at this point, why don't you make an appointment with me? Because I think that, you know, certainly we can work within your budget.
Right. Yeah. And we talk a lot about, with various different attorneys, the difference in approach from the phone consultation to an in-office. And that, you know, the phone consultation tends to be a little bit less specific as far as exactly what it's going to cost, more just making sure the client knows, you know, that they felt heard, they understood, and that you have an understanding of what needs to be done, you know, from a legal standpoint. And then third being that, hey, you know, you can work with me in my budget. That's really, you know, for you, has that been the main thing you're trying to get across on that consultation?
I think it depends. I don't like to be in charge of the conversation. Some people, you know, they want to tell you what they can afford and what they can't afford. And some people want to ask you point blank, what is this going to cost?
Right.
And I find if you say, oh, I don't want to talk about it over the phone, you know, people, they think you're being coy or they don't trust you. If they, you know, I would, of course, prefer to have them come into my office and talk about everything and, you know, assess the situation before I start pinning numbers on what things are going to cost. But if they ask me point blank, then I'm happy to talk about it.
Right. Right. It's okay. And so, but you mentioned that, you know, you explained to them, you know, how unbundled works. How do you articulate to them what that concept is? Obviously, you're saying it's lower cost, it's more inexpensive. One of the things you talk about is a flat rate. You know, that's you know, not every attorney offers flat rates. Do you explain a little bit more about why you operate in that fashion, or how do you explain to them how that works?
Well, what I usually say is that the idea of unbundled is that you can pay for discrete tasks, whether that's to do the papers but not appear in court, or appear in court but don't do the papers, or just or consult with me as to whether my property settlement agreement is fair, or you know, just write this letter. And what I say, which is true, is that, however, most people ask me, well, just tell me what it would cost to do the whole thing for full representation. To it, I usually say, well, what I do is, for something of your type of case, I charge a flat fee. And then I say the truth. My flat fee is usually $3,500 or $4,000 or something like that. But in order to make it more affordable to you, I can just do it for half price. So if it's, you know, $5,000 case, I say, how about $2,500 flat fee? And people usually say, wow, okay, yeah. I mean, everyone's telling me $5,000, so that sounds reasonable to me.
Yeah. And how do you balance that? You know, a lot of attorneys, I guess the main, you know, I don't know, resistance or, you know, for attorneys that don't offer flat rates is they're concerned that, you know, if they offer a flat rate, then they're going to end up spending more time on a case and not getting paid for it. But, you know, then of course you have the ones that you spend less time on and get paid more. So how has that balanced out for you, and how do you mitigate quoting flat rates and not getting stuck too often in a position where you're working on a case longer than you may be getting paid for if you just done it on a normal retainer?
It's just that. In most cases, in 80-90% of the cases, it's fine. You know, it's discreet. You do it. It's done. Everyone gets a good result, and you're out. In 10% of the cases, you end up having more work than it's worth, because you have to come back on a different day, or it doesn't resolve that first day, or it just goes sideways in some way. And that happens. But I can live with a 90-10 ratio.
Right. And are there times when you may quote a flat rate and then you're able to, you know, because of the streamlining we talked about, you doing this over and over every day, you know, every day with so many clients, that you're able to get things done really in an expeditious fashion, and maybe it doesn't take you, you know, if your normal hourly rate was $250 an hour and your flat rate's, you know, $2,000, or, you know, let's say $200, $2,000, that's 10 hours, maybe you can get it done in 5 because you're just being really efficient. Does that also happen as well, where you can balance that?
That's true. And also, sometimes, to the extent that I have, you know, multiple cases, I can do 3 in one morning. And no one suffers because, well, as many of the lawyers know, there's a lot of waiting around and things like that. So I can do 3 or even 4 cases in a morning or an afternoon. Also, the one thing I didn't mention is that sometimes I do a sort of what I would call a mixed bag, where I say, okay, it's X amount of dollars to go to court and pursue and engage in mediation, and maybe address the judge, have some oral argument. But if, as sometimes happens, the judge says, I can't decide this case without having a trial, a plenary hearing from witnesses, I tell people that's a different story. If it reaches that point, then we have to reassess our situation. And maybe at that point, we do have to go to an hourly rate type of thing.
Right.
So that's the way I'm able to sort of hedge.
Right. So maybe you'll have do you put together an initial agreement that says, okay, it's going to cover up to this point? And then and that's what that rate is for right there. This amount of tasks up to this stage, and then, you know, a new agreement would have to be put together if it went beyond that.
That's right. I put in the agreement in bold letters, this is what it covers, and by the way, this is what it doesn't cover. Meaning, if it has to go to trial, we have to negotiate a new retainer agreement.
Right, exactly. Okay, so what I'd like to do is just switch gears just a little bit, because, you know, given that we've been working together so long, one of the things I know that you've been starting to experiment with is serving some additional regions to, you know, up the volume even further. And, you know, New Jersey is a compact enough state that, you know, you have a little bit more of ability to travel around if you had the choice. Can you talk about how you've been going about the process of starting to serve other regions, and how you've been able to find the space and just make that and balance that out so that you're still able to make that pencil out for you?
Yeah, so the counties where I'm primarily involved in are Monmouth County, which is my base, and Ocean County. And recently, I've picked up other counties, other adjacent counties or outlying counties, Middlesex, Mercer, Burlington, even Atlantic County, And my initial hesitancy in doing that was when, if you get a lead and they say, where's your office? And I say, it's in Monmouth County. They say, oh, it's 45 minutes away. I mean, how's that ever going to work? But what I've ended up doing is saying, well, that's fine because I have an office in Middlesex County, or I have an office in Lanham County, which is partially true because what I end up doing is calling lawyers who I know in different counties and saying, can I use your office? And invariably they say, of course, just tell me when you want and you want, I'll give you a conference room. You know, tell me how you like your coffee. and so I've been willing to drive to Mercer or wherever it is and meet a client in another lawyer's office.
Right. And has it, up till now, has it always been that you've had attorneys that you knew of in those, you know, that you had relationships with in those counties, or have you just, you know, have there been scenarios where you just call up an attorney's office and ask if you could use it?
I've used lawyers that lawyers' offices who I know, but recently I had a case in Atlanta County. I didn't know anyone there. And I sent out a social media request. We have like a chat room or something like that. And I said, can I use someone's office in Atlanta County? And I got like, I don't know, 5 or 6 different requests right away. Yes, of course. And okay. I just called the first one and it was perfectly accommodating.
Okay. And, you know, obviously some of these locations are, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. I'm not sure how far is Atlanta County from your office?
Atlanta County is a good hour away.
Okay. And so how have you penciled that out? Have you just been charging the same rate, or do you add, you know, something, do you add a little extra to the flat rate you quote, or how do you balance out the travel time given that, number one, you're going there to meet with the client, and then driving back, and then also you're going to have to appear in that court date. It adds in that travel time. Have you just kind of written that off, or is that something you kind of build in?
First of all, It really is. In the one case where I got one lead from Atlanta County. I've only been doing this very, very recently, and I did go to Atlanta County. I did meet the person. They did retain me. But it's really two trips. It's there to initially talk to the person. After that, everything else is email and phone and things like that. And then there will be one court appearance where I will also, again, have to go to Atlanta County. And, you know, truthfully, I'm experimenting with it because I do have to charge a little bit more for a case that I know I'm going to have to travel at least twice to to Atlanta County. However, I really don't mind necessarily the travel because I make phone calls. It's not unproductive time.
Right. You know, so you don't know if you have a Bluetooth or something, but that could be time where you're making lead calls or following up with people that you haven't talked to. So you make good use of that time while you're longer, or maybe listen to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind podcast, right?
Yeah. Sometimes when I'm looking for entertainment, I do that. Yeah. Yeah. I know I do. I do make phone calls and I speak to clients. I make a list and I return phone calls.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it's still in its experimental phase. And I think, you know, for attorneys that have actually succeeded in expanding out the regions, you know, it's usually a two-phase process where, number one, they start doing the travel time themselves. But then we have had some offices or attorneys that have created contact relationships with attorneys in those cities where, you know, they're actually, you know, acquiring an office space, paying for the landline, the phone line, and then having an office that an attorney that works with them under their firm working on that space. Is that something you've been considering doing down the line? And are you experimenting and seeing if you can get some clients there and land them to do that? Or is it you see yourself doing the travel time regardless long-term, as long as it pencils out for you?
Yeah, I've thought about that. And I have listened to one or two of the podcasts with lawyers in different states and regions that have done that. And I am considering it. But for now, I just do the travel. It's not such a bad thing being away from my desk.
Right. Yeah. You get to actually get outside and see the sights. And I've heard the Jersey Shore isn't that bad either.
No, it's nice. Very nice.
Okay. And then maybe the last thing we can talk about is a little bit more about the streamlining. And then maybe we can ask one final question just, you know, from what you've pulled from the year and a half of fielding leads and so forth. But is there anything else that you guys have developed as a system or within your team
for, you know, streamlining the process from the time that you enroll a client to, you know, delivering and so forth, especially if you're working with them remotely, for example. Let's say you enroll a client, you talk to them over the phone, you schedule them in. How do you interface that mobility with your team to make sure that that's happening all in a cohesive and organized fashion? Is there anything that you developed to make that work seamlessly?
Yeah, the one thing that I've been doing, which has helped me a great deal, is to try to do the work immediately. So if I retain the client, if the client retains me, as best I can, I like to do the work either that day or that week. Because I'm starting to have a lot of volume, my previous practice was to say, okay, I'm retained, and I say to my secretary, all right, make an appointment, you know, 2 weeks from now, and we'll deal with it later or something like that. But then those cases get lost. You know, if you don't deal with it when it's fresh and get it done and out, then there's a tendency, at least in my practice, to have people get lost in the cracks. And then it's embarrassing and difficult to try to fix it. It's much better to just to invest an hour or 2 hours or whatever it takes, do the work right away, and file those papers right away. And then you have some time to take a deep breath and wait for the court date to come up, and not the other way around.
Right. Just keeping ahead of the game and also just getting it started right then and there, as opposed to putting it off and then having everything start to pile up as a...
Right.
Yeah, as it inevitably will.
Right. Yeah, right, exactly.
Okay, and then maybe just final question, and then we can go ahead and wrap it up, is just, you know, obviously sure. We've been doing this for a year and a half, which is, you know, of course, surprising, but, you know, things have been going well for you. I mean, I think what I'd heard is that you've been talking to about 8 out of 10 of the clients, and then about half of them are retaining you. So, you know, 4 out of 10 clients or so, or 5 out of 10, you know, something in that range, you know, out of each lead is retaining for service. So you develop a system that's working really well. You're seeing some great results. Is there anything that you've learned either through mistakes over these last year and a half, or things that you've adapted, and, you know, it could be just reiterations of things we've already talked about, that that really has made the difference for you over this, you know, the past 18 months in making sure that you're as efficient and effective as possible at calling and converting each of these leads?
I think the mistake that I made initially was something we had touched on earlier, was it's the same scenario that you were describing, which is I've started to have a lot more volume and a lot more cases. And at one point I said, okay, now I can sit back and rest on my laurels and allow, you know, my staff to make appointments, and I'll just sit there and wait for them to come in, which invariably does not happen. You still have to be diligent, and you have to return phone calls, and, you know, you have to do it yourself. The little extra effort that you do pays off in the end. That's been my experience, because, again, I'm repeating myself, but the same thing that you had said, which was invariably the retention rate drops as soon as I delegate it out to a secretary to make an appointment.
Right. Yeah. And if there's going to be a delegation, you know, it really comes down to, you know, at least what we found with attorneys we've talked to all throughout the country, is the delegation starts happening if you want to have the legal work done once the person is enrolled.
Right.
You know, that either have a paralegal doing the document preparation, or, like we said, hiring an associate or a contract lawyer where you're assigning that client to that contract attorney to do the legal work. But the sale, essentially, we call it the sale or the enrollment process, is something we've had very, very few attorneys had any success at outsourcing, because people want to talk to a lawyer. They want to create that relationship. They want to build that trust. It's just such an essential component of calling an inner lead that, you know, it's not something that can be substituted.
Exactly. I agree.
All right. Well, hey, Brian, I want to thank you again for taking the time today, for sharing so openly about how this last 18 months has been, and the systems and strategies that you developed over these years to offer these options. And we're grateful that you're open and willing to do so and help more clients as a result. So thank you so much for sharing, and we'll continue to keep sending those leads.
My pleasure. Have a happy holiday season.
Okay, awesome. And to everyone else that's listening to the podcast, we certainly appreciate your participation. If there's anyone else that you know that you think would benefit from some of these episodes, feel free to share it. And also check us out on iTunes. Leave us a review. We read every single one, and we would appreciate your feedback. For those of you that haven't heard our webinar, go to unbundledattorney.com. It's a condensing of all some of these concepts into one-hour webinar, and it's on our website, www.unbundledattorney.com. It's free. And so with that, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see everyone on the next episode. Thanks so much.
For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.